morning show. Yeah, some people love the Queen.
Yeah. Some people love the Queen. Yeah, that's all we got to say.
Yeah, so that's it. No further comment. Ailish Forfar, Blake Murphy, JD Bunkus.
Text line Tuesday. Don't text in about Tuesday. The Queen, though.
Well, I mean, if you do, that was actually pretty funny. Some people, like I said, love the Queen. Don't like any jokes about the Queen. Okay. All right.
Off okay. limits.
Off limits. Queen duck for you.
You know who's getting knighted? That person.
Yeah, probably.
They probably are knighted.
So this whole season has been the Cardinals looking great and the Cardinals winning games even when they haven't had Kyler Murray. And yet, whenever we do the who's the best team in the NFL conversation, it's always like kind of the hipster answer to be like, what about the Cardinals, huh?
Huh?
All those road wins with 10-plus point differential, huh? What about that? What do you think about the Cardinals? And everyone's kind of like, all right, yeah, Cardinals. Yeah, it's Cardinals too. And last night is exactly why we did the like, oh yeah, the Cardinals too.
That's why I went road dogs.
Yeah.
Short road dogs.
I might have jumped on the line the second I saw the Jalen Ramsey wasn't in that game and thought, oh, DeAndre Hopkins will do well. And then he was like, I don't catch anymore. Tyler Dunn, national NFL writer, Go Long newsletter, golongtd.com. He's got a great piece up right now that we're definitely going to delve into why coaching still matters in the NFL. Again, you can get that at golongtd.com. What's up, Ty? How we doing, buddy?
Doing good, JD. Good to be back, man. Sorry, it's been a little while. You know, yeah. two kids, a lot of Grinch, a lot of work. It's kind of a combination of everything. I'm glad we're doing
you.
This.
How dare you try to run your own business and have children and not do our show at the crack of dawn, you monster. Now, tell me why the Cardinals are frauds. Come on, let's just be clear here. What do you take away from a game like that? Because I know that historically, this is one of those NFC West things that anybody who actually bet the Cardinals like me is an idiot because it's the rock, paper, scissors weird thing in that division where it's like, this is the one, this team owns that team owns this team. But I couldn't help come away from it with like, man, I'm not ready to believe in you, Cardinals. Like, I'm sorry. There's just something about you that I'm not buying it.
I know it. I made that leap last week with watching Kyler Murray. Granted, it's the Bears. Maybe that's the first mistake, right? It's the Bears. But he looked so good. I mean, it seemed like a month off just really paid off. They didn't rush him back when they could have rushed him back. And thinking about that collapse last season, 5-2 and again, what, 8-8. I thought that Cliff would try to get him back there fast, and he didn't. They waited, and he looked great. He is basically Allen Iverson playing quarterback, just juking all over the place. And, yeah, I guess that's why the NFL is what it is in 2021. The second that you want to, push all your chips in toward a team, a contender, and say this is the team to beat, they have a game like that last night. So what are the problems? I guess, defensively, they have a couple studs. I mean, you've got the Buda Bakers and the Chandler Joneses, but it's not like this is a defense that was even – shutting teams down week in and week out. They were kind of relying on turnovers, and that's always, risky when you do that. And you mentioned it, DeAndre Hopkins, I think they targeted him 12 times. He caught 5 balls. Wasn't exactly himself. So, you add it all up and you don't have much of a running game, you're going to get wiped out by the Rams at home.
Yeah, I it's weird because you would think things like, hey, the James Conner and A.J. Green, those gambles have paid off in crazy good ways. And you go, wow, really? Okay, well, considering the other weapons they have, this team's going to be lights out. And they are good, right? Like, I know that this is an overreaction because they just lost a game. But I will say this is like, Kyler makes plays that no other quarterback in the NFL makes right now, where it's like he does these scramble, evade plays, and then he throws it on the run, and you go, well, that's unstoppable. Or even like the drive at the end of the second half, just his ability to kind of pick up the field goal all with his legs and the timing of it. There's just you said it, Allen Iverson playing quarterback, where you're watching this guy and you go, damn, like that feels unstoppable. That feels video game-ish. That's like Michael Vick, Madden stuff. And then there are those moments, though, like that interception he threw, the second one where Blake and I are texting back and forth and you go, size seems to matter at some point. And do I trust this guy in a game where you have to come back like that, where you're down multiple scores, to be able to deliver those throws and see down the field? And those are the kind of times where I go, yeah, maybe being, whatever he is, 5'8", that like maybe that matters just a little bit too.
Definitely. I mean, God, what was the play where I think Von Miller looked like he was going to take his head off and he just like ducks and he flies over him and he's running around. And here comes Aaron Donald. So, yeah, I think if you have that relentless pass rush without needing to blitz, and then you can sit back in coverage and in the end zone and just kind of take away those throwing windows as a smaller, shorter quarterback that can catch up to you. I mean, we saw it catch up to him in that game. So, you know, the other thing is the Rams. And I think I was quick to write them off after they lost to the team that eliminated them a year ago. They looked bad against Green Bay. It was the same Matt Stafford. But I think we forget, you know, Odell Beckham, Von Miller, once they get some games under them, once they kind of get accustomed to that offense and that defense and playing alongside Aaron Donald on defense for Von Miller and, you know, alongside Cooper Kupp and all those weapons on offense, they're only going to get better and better. And they looked really good last night. So eventually talent could rise to the surface too, I guess.
What do you see from the Rams in terms of, like, what the ideal version of this team or the best version of this team, if everything clicks, looks like? Because obviously, again, like you said, the Kupp-Beckham combination looked amazing last night with 19 receptions and over 200 yards and a couple of touchdowns. They're doing that without Higbee. The defense looks pretty solid without Jalen Ramsey. Is there enough time for all of this to coalesce to where we need to upgrade the Rams to a real threat in the NFC?
I think so, right? I think that these are such big names, brand names, proven names that it matters. Eventually, you know, talent does matter. And if you're going to just feed these weapons in Sean McVay's offense and you can't stop them, they can outscore anybody. They can go drive for drive with anybody. They can force you to play that kind of game. You know, I tend to think that lack of physicality might come back to bite them at some point. You know, just the way we've seen this season kind of play out and the need to still just, you know, hammer away with a Derrick Henry or a Nick Chubb or a Jonathan Taylor. I feel like that kind of team, that kind of formula is still going to pay off. But if the Rams can force it into a shootout, if they can get Green Bay, Tampa Bay to play that kind of game, they showed it last night. I mean, they can win that kind of game because they just have – I don't know how you defend them. If Odell is Odell, and that's a huge if. I mean, the Browns, they lived that what if. I still wouldn't hold my breath for it. But if he is anything remotely close to what we saw early in his career with the Giants, look out for the Rams, I guess.
So speaking of huge ifs, those Buffalo Bills, it's been a roller coaster of emotions as a fan, you know, coming out hot, then dropping right off the face of the earth, then fighting back in against the Bucks on Monday or Sunday. And so you wrote about why coaching still matters in the NFL, and everyone can go read that at golongtd.com. But I want to talk a little bit about Sean McDermott, and you said, you know, I can't help but wonder if he's the best coach for the QB. I just wanted to know a little bit more on what your thoughts were with the Bills and their coaching situation right now.
Right. I mean, I know he's not calling plays. He's a defensive coach. If he's calling plays, it's on that side of the ball. But you watch the Bills week in and week out. This is 4 years now that we've seen this out of Sean McDermott. Mm-hmm. He coaches so passively, so scared. He's punting all the time. He's kicking chip shot field goals all the time. He's operating as if Trent Edwards is his quarterback. Nathan Peterman, who he started twice, by the way. He trots him out there against the Chargers when the team's in the thick of the playoff race, and then starts him as the week one guy the next season when he has no business being in on the team or the NFL. So I don't know how smart Sean McDermott is when it comes to offensive football, and we see it in Josh Allen. I mean, that was his best game, I think, of his career in defeat against Tampa Bay. He's unbelievable. He ran for 100 yards, threw for 300. He just put the team on his back on one good ankle. We'll see if he even plays this week. But he's held back by Sean McDermott. I really believe that. I think we've seen it 4 years now. This is a coach stuck in a different era. And the longer that he's running the show, I think we're not going to see the absolute best out of a truly special player in Josh Allen.
We're talking to Tyler Dunn. And Tyler, you had that column, Why Coaching Still Matters in the NFL, at golongtd.com. I'm curious if it's not McDermott who's the fit with Josh Allen and where the Bills need to go next, or for any team who's kind of looking at their coaching situation and wondering, hey, what takes us to the next step? And we've talked, there are a number of teams that I think fit that description. Who are the next guys or who would be at the top of your list in terms of at least giving a look to? I know we don't, you know, it's hard to extrapolate from a coordinator position sometimes, but at a certain point, you'd hope these teams stop going back to the same name. So who would be on your radar as a if you're the Bills, if you're my Jacksonville Jaguars or something like that, and you're looking to make a change?
Well, that's a good question. You know, I haven't really wrapped my head around who the next guy is. And maybe I sound a little harsh on McDermott. I don't think he's going to get fired anytime soon because they were in the AFC Championship game a year ago, and they just gave him that six-year contract. I mean, they'll definitely scapegoat others and hang on to him as long as possible. I'm just saying, you can freeze and take this all you want. I just don't think they're going to win the Super Bowl with him. I don't know. It just week in, week out, it's the same story. But, yeah, in terms of the next guy, we say it every year, right? Eric Bieniemy, I don't know when he gets his shot, but you would think it'd be soon. Even with their struggles on offense, he's always somebody you have to consider given how long he's been around Andy Reid, even beyond offensive football. I think he's somebody that knows how a franchise kind of has to be run. But honestly, I haven't really wrapped my head around it. You know, Tampa Bay, Byron Leftwich, and it seems like he's doing more and more with Tom Brady. I think Todd Bowles probably gets another shot if that defense kind of revs into form. I know Nathaniel Hackett is a name that's floated, and Aaron Rodgers loves him. I bet you Aaron Rodgers does everything in his power to make sure Hackett goes nowhere. You know, in terms of that coaching staff, it's Hackett that the quarterback loves more than LaFleur. I think he gets along okay with LaFleur. I don't think it's as lovey-dovey as they make it seem. But, yeah, it's Hackett. So they'll try to do everything they can to keep him, though. He's somebody at this rate that probably gets a few interviews.
So I don't think you should apologize for the McDermott thing because it's painfully obvious at this point. Like, and I actually think if the Bills, well, I mean, obviously if they miss the playoffs, he's got to be a goner. There's just no doubt about that. But even if you flame out in the first round of the playoffs and you continue to not optimize your roster, then I think it's the same thing. There is nothing more frustrating as an NFL fan than watching your team have an elite quarterback and a coaching staff that doesn't get enough out of that player. And I know this because I cheer for the Seattle Seahawks. I've seen this year in, year out, year in, year out. And if you're a Buffalo Bills fan right now, I think that there's a couple of things that you're worried about and that you're flagging. One is that your roster construction really does seem all about beating the Chiefs. And that can be a bit of a problem if you just try to beat one team. All of a sudden you go, oh, right. Other teams exist, and we might have to beat them too, not just the Chiefs. Boy, perhaps we should have prepared for this potential. And number two, though, is that, like, you stick with a coach because they're a culture builder, right? And you're a team or an organization that hasn't had success for a very long time. And so there's this whole fear of going, well, we don't want to be too big for our britches here. We're doing pretty good. And McDermott's built this culture up and blah, blah, blah. That is just sometimes part of the evolution. We saw it here in Toronto. The Dwayne Casey came here. He built an incredible foundation with the Toronto Raptors. And eventually they said, you know what? We need to try something different. We need to see if the core you built can be elevated by somebody else. And that's how I view the Bills. And that's when I watch McDermott when he's at podiums saying that you shouldn't give too much credit to Belichick. And then his team seems whiny because the coach is whiny. I'm like, yeah, you know, maybe spin this dude out of town. If Josh Allen, who looks like to me when he's going, like, honest to God, he looks like he could be the best quarterback in the entire NFL. Like, that is the type of guy that he is. I think he throws the ball differently. I think he runs the ball differently. There's still some stuff that we need to see from him in terms of, like, big game, maybe just consistency. Mm-hmm. But either way, like, you cannot just burn years of elite quarterback play on, well, we don't really want to make this all about the coach. It's like, I'm sorry, if the Bills underachieved this year, the goal was Super Bowl. They were favorites. He was the MVP favorite. You don't get out of the first round. You don't show real signs of progress. I'm sorry. You keep seeing the things that you're saying, Ty. He has to go. This is not a freezing cold situation. This is like an obvious one to me.
I'm glad you went there. I agree with 100% of what you said, JD. It makes too much sense. We've seen it before. And the Russell Wilson comparison is perfect. It really is. I mean, here's a special talent that's playing the position in a different way. And, oh, by the way, is this remarkable leader for so many different reasons. And you want to play a way that brings the game back to the 70s or the 80s and punt and end every drive with a kick. And you're not going to change. I mean, the AFC Championship should have been the wake-up call for Sean McDermott. Like, I get it. The Chiefs blew him out. They weren't going to win that game. But decisions just define coaches, and they speak to the mentality of a coach. And as you said, the team takes on the personality of their coach. If Sean McDermott's going to complain and not give Bill Belichick credit and be defensive and scream and yell on the sideline and be out of his element, then the players are going to be like that too. And we saw that after that Patriots game. So if he's going to settle for a chip shot field goal at the end of the first half against the Chiefs, when it's clear the Chiefs are a threat to score a touchdown every single time they have the ball, that's the kind of team you're going to be forever and ever. And maybe you can kind of trip your way into a Super Bowl and you know, you get the Legion of Boom defense like Seattle had. I mean, it was kind of a perfect storm there early on. Eventually, you know, they just didn't take advantage of what Russell Wilson does best, and I fear that will be the case with Josh Allen, with Sean McDermott, and unless he completely changes who he is, which is not going to happen.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing more about your takes on coaches over the coming weeks, Ty. And again, people can go to golongtd.com and read more about your takes on coaching and why it's such a big factor in the current NFL. Ty, thanks so much for taking the time this morning, man.
Hey, thank you, guys. Always love coming on. Appreciate it.
See you, buddy.
Ty Dunn, Go Long newsletter, golongtd.com. And now my favorite guest, because he mentioned Byron Leftwich as a head coaching candidate. And I have long maintained, look, I thought it was weird they didn't interview, the Jaguars didn't interview Bieniemy last year before doing the Urban Meyer thing. I've long maintained Leftwich, with his history there and his work with quarterbacks, would be a really natural fit as the next Jacksonville Jaguars head coach.
Yeah,
I love Byron Leftwich.
If you are a successful coordinator over years in the league, I think that it is going to eventually become a something for you. Mm. But like what you're seeing this year with guys like Greg Roman and Ryan Dable, it's kind of why some teams are reluctant to do that, because they want to see the track record sort of play out over the course of, you know, not just having elite talent. So Ailish, you hear Ty rant about the coaching staff. You hear what I'm saying about maybe potentially not getting enough out of Josh Allen and how that manifests. Like, are you in the same place?
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I'm glad. I think it took him a little bit of time to feel like he could say that, because it is a bit of a hot take, like to say, oh, they got to get rid of their coach and they've been AFC fine. Like they've, you know, they've been there, but it's the same thing every year now where you get there and what are the results? And if you can see that Josh Allen feels like he's underappreciated or he's not getting the opportunities that he needs, well, like he's your player, like he's your star. He's not some random quarterback that's not great. Like, he is incredible. We've seen it. Yep. Like, we saw Sunday. He has an incredible arm. Like, why is he not getting the love or the respect from the coach to be able to do the things that he needs to do? So I don't think it's a crazy thing to say. I think when you sit with it and you think about why you would feel that way, it makes a lot of sense. But it does seem hot takey to be like, well, the Bills need to get rid of their head coach. But it really depends on how the rest of the season goes, because they were Super Bowl favorites. Josh Allen was MVP candidate. And now where are we?
Yeah.
Scraping to get into the playoffs.
You're fighting with the Cleveland Browns.
Sweet.
The Browns and the Bills. I got to tell you.
Throw the Lions in there too. Why not?
No, but if that final playoff spot comes down to Bills Browns for the tortured franchise,
it's just
off.
Too much.
I love it. Like I'm really rooting for it. I also, you know me, when Odell's having his great game, I'm like, okay, Baker fans, like let's, what do we got now? What's the next excuse for Baker here? Like all of a sudden Odell's running around looking healthy, looking spry, looking fresh, making plays. Doing celebrations. I'm like, maybe, just maybe, it was the guy who might be the worst starting quarterback in the NFL that's supposed to be a starting quarterback in the NFL. So, oh, go ahead.
I just think this, you know, next week this Panthers, but the week after that is Patriots again. And it's like, that is it for me, is that how that game plays out. You got embarrassed at home where the other quarterback threw the ball like once and you still got smacked around and it was embarrassing. And then you have this pretty good comeback against the Bucks, but why did it take half a game to get to that elite level of play? So I think that if they don't have a complete game against the Patriots, like you don't even have to win, just play. I mean, winning would be great.
No, win.
Please win.
You
but like
win.
If you get to the point where it's one of those games where it is so tight and you're all cylinders are firing, Josh Allen is looking like he's getting the opportunity that he needs and there's trust in him, then I'll feel a little bit better. But the way that things have gone over the last couple of weeks.
Well, you know what I'm afraid of if I'm a Bills fan? And again, not to over-personalize this with Seattle stuff, but the downside of having an elite quarterback is that they can keep coaches employed.
Definitely.
You can have seasons where the Bills say, well, I still don't really even know, like what, I guess 10-7 now, right? There's 17 games. So you can have a season where you're 10-7 and you make the playoffs, and hell, you win a game, maybe even two with Josh Allen, and you don't win a Super Bowl, and ownership or everybody involved goes, what, you're going to fire the coach? You were 11-6, you were 10-7, and you won a playoff round. Like, is that really the issue? No, let's run it back. Like, how do I justifiably...
Sometimes it's not the right fit, though.
Right. How do I justifiably fire this coach when this has been the progress and this has been the track record? And you go, yeah, but what would have happened if it is a different coach with that player? Are you optimizing what you have in your identity, which is Josh Allen's ability?
It happens all the time in the NHL. You go on a little bit of a... like down streak, mm-hmm. and they switch things up, and there's that dead count coach bounce that we've talked about. And not that I think that we're at that point yet, but it's looming.
They're not at that point, but this is the season.
It's a conversation to think about, like to have, yes. to talk about, to try to have your talk therapy about it.
Yes. Like if you're Blake, it's obvious. Like you've got a coach
Poor guy.
I'm just saying, like, you have a coach who has turned the number one prospect of the last, like, I don't know, decade into garbage. He has had like a scandal off the field.
And it's just a lot of bad stuff happening.
He fights
over
with
there.
His coaches. He's getting into it with his players. I think he's pretty safe to say he's gone. But yeah, I think it's a little bit more complicated when you have coaches that have, you know, track records at building those cultures, mm-hmm. and you have organizations that are generally moving in the positive direction. You don't want to be overly reactionary to something like that. But boy, I think Josh Allen has a really good shot at being the best player in the league. And how often do you get that opportunity with those kind of players? And I just think that, like, if there are things you can do to improve those percentage points of winning or optimizing those great players,
then you do it.
You gotta do it. Like, you just gotta do it. You cannot have the Josh Allen story end in,
no.
he's 27,
no.
28 years old, and now you're finally going out and getting somebody different. Like, no. You gotta do it now. You gotta act now. Especially since, like, let's be real, too. The division... As much as we're all fawning over the Patriots and Belichick and all these things, like, Mac Jones, let's see you win big games. Like, your biggest game of your career and your coach told you not to throw the football. Like, yeah, you are playing in a cold weather place and you mm-hmm. are apparently just completely a stranger to snow. It's still kind of time to capitalize.
Yeah. I've never seen snow before.
Yeah,
it's like a puppy the first time they get the snow falling. All right, it's time for something to chew on. Yeah. Brought to you by Great Canadian Meats. Your Toronto Raptors won last night. Big time. Big blowout. 124-101 against
the
Sacramento Kings.
The Kings last night.
We're going to talk about the Toronto Raptors, and we're going to answer some of your texts mm-hmm. in the next block. But a little something to chew on as we head to break. We've talked a lot about how the Raptors' core four of Van Vliet, Ananobi, Siakam, and Barnes have not played a lot together this year. They've played 52 minutes. That's nothing. It doesn't tell us a lot. However, if you... acknowledge that OG Anunoby has missed a boatload of time, and you slide Gary Trent in there instead, because that's been the set starting four, is Siakam, Van Vliet, Trent, and Barnes. You are starting to see a decent sample of them being one of the more successful foursomes in basketball. They are up to a plus 6.6 net rating as a group on the season, and over their last six games, which has been with Precious Achiuwa or Chris Boucher in at center, they have a net rating of plus 16. 16 points per 100 possessions.
Yeah, they just played the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Sacramento Kings and the New York Knicks. They better have good numbers.
Yes. Like, however, those numbers were not there when they were playing lesser teams the last little bit. And that stretch also includes games against the Wizards, who, yes, have come back down to earth, but have had a pretty good season.
No, you can't play both sides of the Wizards, Blake. You got to pick a side. You've said Wizards are trash all year long, right about the Wizards being trash.
I'm willing to concede that if we're conceding that I'm right about the Wizards being trash.
Yeah, that's...
Because a lot of people still disagree with me.
No, that's it. I'm just saying, no, you can't play both sides. You're not Ailish. Yeah. Only Ailish plays both sides.
That's my role.
In that stretch, you also have the Grizzlies without Jaw in a game you lost. You have the Bucks without Giannis. So
there's nothing.
It's a low. I'm just saying, we talked for weeks about how they weren't taking care of the low-hanging fruit, and that was a big part of why they were struggling. And yeah, now they're back to a game under 500, and they're back in a play-in spot, and that's nothing. Mm-hmm. But they've also had both their centers and their best defensive player out for a really long time now, and the guys who are around are starting to figure it out.
Okay,
is all I'm chewing on.
So I want to, I do want to discuss this with you guys here. I want to take a second on this because to me, the Raptors are the most obvious team ever. They're better and more structured than the bad teams. So when they play bad teams, they should thump them, or they should at least be like, there's a clear delineation between what the Raptors are and the bad teams. I don't know why we're like still trying to answer this question. Like, we know this. We all know it in our bones. Like,
yeah,
those teams show up.
We picked them to finish 500 heading into the year.
Exactly.
What is a 500 team?
That's it. Is like, what is the goal of the season? Like, is it to find out that the Raptors can continue to beat the Sacramento Kings?
Sweet.
And the, you know, like that, that's what, that's where they are right now. They're not good enough to beat good teams, and they're good enough to beat the bad ones. And maybe the odd night they will beat a good team, but maybe the odd night they'll lose to the Oklahoma City Thunder. Like, that is the team.
And they're plagued by injuries, which makes it tough to actually evaluate where this team is going and what they have. And I think that that is the biggest thing, is like, we haven't had a full sample size.
Which is why we have to chew on these little morsels of, hey, stuff's going in the right direction.
I don't know if we do.
I don't think...
52 minutes with OG, man.
I don't think that if OG comes in to this roster right now, that all of a sudden they're a contender.
No.
I don't think that they're even like an upper tier team.
No.
But
so, that's not what I'm saying.
You drop OG and the only two centers on your roster back in with the way things are clicking, and I think maybe they could get confidence that, hey, you could push for the sixth seed instead of being a play-in team, and your mileage is going to vary on that as a fan and what direction you think they should take. But if they're evaluating internally how close they are and how many pieces away or how many years away they are, that's a relevant difference. Being in the 10-11 battle versus in the 5-6-7 battle is a different thing. And I am not saying this because to like do victory laps of, oh, the Raptors are almost back to 500. It's, look, this whole season is about finding stuff out and seeing how the pieces fit. And if OG and Ken Burch and now Precious Achiuwa are not going to be able to be a part of that sample, we have to look at what's there. And we're at least seeing it a little bit. And I'd say specifically the Fred, Scotty, honestly, specifically the Scotty Pascal thing is the thing that is the most interesting, because they were struggling together early on and they're getting some nice connectivity on offense now. They are the highest volume passing combination on the Raptors that doesn't involve Fred VanVleet, which is really encouraging, especially since there were a bunch of games where they didn't play together. I'm not willing to do the whole like, well, we know what they are, so we're going to throw out everything that's happening.
I'm not saying we're throwing out everything that's happening. This isn't my argument. My argument isn't even that let's not listen to that information. Let's not take in that information. I think this is a perfect something to chew on. I think that this is one where it's like, hey, here are the numbers. Mm-hmm. What are we looking at here? Here's the sample. And I'm saying, okay, when we are analyzing the sample, we now look at stuff like in football, DVOA, right? Mm-hmm. Strength of schedule, strength of opponent. The Raptors have been home for this stretch, and they've played nobody. And so
and
reading,
they went 4-3.
And exactly. They went 4-3 in a home stretch, and that's who I think they are. I think they're a team that hovers around 500. They're going to do a lot of stretches in over 7-game samples where they go 3-4 or 4-3. And that at the end of the season, they're probably going to end up somewhere kind of in this middle. And so I do think that there is like, you know, we've talked about this before, that this is sort of a Raptors thing. And I know this is a weird thing to say as a sports radio host who's super reactionary, but it's like, we love reacting to these like small little snippets of Raptor seasons where we go, see, oh no, see, oh no. Like, it's just, it's, I get seasick sometimes with this team when in reality, it's like, don't you see the up and down nature? Is like, they're 500. They're in the middle. They're not good. They're not bad.
Well, it's I don't like, it's not a feature. It's a bug thing.
Yeah.
But like, it's not a, this is what 500 teams do.
Yeah.
they go up and down around that 500 mark.
I know.
Every team, this is the thing, is like when you're winning 60% of your games, those up and downs hover around a 60% mark.
Right.
Now they're hovering around a 50% mark. And yeah, it's fine. I mean, look, I mostly just feel good that we pegged them exactly as what they were coming into the season. And yeah, if they're healthy, maybe they've won a game or two more. Mm-hmm. But they're roughly a 500 team that, you know, is going to be a little above or a little below based on the decisions they make the next little bit. Which is, again, where maybe turning things around and adding up some more wins right now and getting back in that playoff picture changes where we're going with that. Anyway.
So I want to take a break.
Yeah.
And I want to come back. And it's Text Line Tuesday. So
lots
fire away.
Lots of text firing in there.
Good.
Let's go.
590, 590. Put your name on it.
Yeah, put your name on it.
Don't be a little coward.
Yeah.
Put your name on it.
Like, also, like put Steve from Waterloo. Put your fealty to which monarchy you're...
Yeah. How offended you are by the queen talk. is pretty good. But I do want to sort of, at some point in the show, delve into what you said there. Because, like, to me, I don't really care what the Raptors' record is because I know what they are. But what I do care about is what Blake said there about getting signs of positivity when it comes to chemistry between, like, anybody with Scotty Barnes, essentially. Yes, it's like, here's what I can tell you about this Raptor season. If you fit with Scotty Barnes, you're going to be here. Like, you know, you got a future with this team, buddy. It's the Fan Morning Show. Text line Tuesday, 590-590. Follow us on our socials, at Ailish Forfar, at JD Bunkus. Blake Murphy has two, so just search Blake Murphy. He's not the one that does the Cardinals podcast. Text line Tuesday, that's next. See you then.
Welcome back to the Fan Morning Show.
What is going on?
Well, Ailish was all excited because someone sent a really nice text.
A really nice text.
And then they followed up with kiss face, and now she's less excited about the text.
Don't be creep in the text line.
Text line, baby!
I just view the kiss for me.
It literally says, thanks, A, with a kiss.
Yeah, maybe his name
is it. Our boy Will from Niagara. I was trying to help him out because his signal was fading driving to Brantford.
I'll take a kiss.
This is the 590 static, apparently. So I said, stream it online or use the app.
Or, you know.
Or the podcast. Subscribe, yeah, like, cool. Download.
Honest to God. I'm just getting tired of asking for people to follow and subscribe to the podcast. All right?
Not that hard.
You know, I have people in the DMs, so, like, I always keep those open, right, during the show, at JD Bunkus on Instagram. And I had one guy who just messaged me right now. I wanted to read this one to you guys quickly because it's Brian. And he messaged, does the Leafs coaching take apply to the Leafs wasting Matthews and Marner? Mm-hmm. And here's what I have to say to that. Absolutely not. Those guys already got a head coach. Yeah. They've already had the change. The only interesting thing is with Sheldon Keefe, that's so funny and that we never talk about nearly enough. We've kind of hinted at it with Bourne, but it's like Sheldon Keefe is just different Mike Babcock. Like, people don't seem to talk about this ever at all. It's like, that is who he is as a coach. Like, he's Babs. And there's someone out there right now going, this is no way. It's like, yeah, that's exactly who he is. Mm. You know who he came up under? Babs. You know who he learned from? Babs. You know who he coaches like?
The most successful coach of the era when he was coming up. And so who's the guy you're going to emulate?
He coaches like Babcock. The only difference is that he likes Spezza. Like, that's it.
I don't know that there's like,
you guys
a
are
ton
rubes.
Of stratification between coaching types.
Not between these two. They're coaching the same thing. Like, they do the exact same thing. They value the same things. Like, it's hilarious. Like, anyways, people always thought, oh, Sheldon Keefe is going to come in here, run and gun. He's going to get more out of Tyson Barrie. That's the whole focus of Sheldon Keefe, Tyson Barrie. I can tell you with certainty that Tyson Barrie was not loved by Sheldon Keefe. That they had many conversations similar to the one that we saw in that Amazon doc with... Who was that? It wasn't Galchenyuk. It was one of those other guys, though, kind of like Galchenyuk.
VC.
VC, yeah. The Galchenyuk light.
Tonight's the Tyson Barrie return rematch also.
Goal.
Yeah. You know what's brutal?
The thing I really care about.
Yeah, well, the thing about Tyson Barrie is, like, you never miss him, and he's always going to put up stats, and so
63 points in 82 games
as an
Oiler.
Hey, dude, you pass the puck up to Connor McDavid. Like, you're going to get points. Like, it's going to go down that way.
I was going
to
say, Tyson Barrie, love you as a fantasy piece. Yeah.
Oh,
much
for sure.
More than an on-ice piece.
And good radio guest. I've had Tyson Barrie on. I told him that I used to kill him in the media, and he took it with just kind of like a grain of salt. I think he's pretty popular with his teammates because I do believe that he is one of those guys where it just, you know, it's water off a duck's back with him. Like, he doesn't care what you think about him.
Gotta have thick skin.
Yeah, I think he has it. I really do. So I actually admire the guy. I think that there's a lot of, like, people like me who probably overcriticize him and that it's harder to get those points in the NHL than I'm making it out to seem like pass it up to McDavid. But also, like, not once have I ever felt like, boy, really wish we had Tyson Barrie back for this game. Sorry, but just never will, never have. What's in the text line?
Let's start with some Raptors because we just finished off with that. So we got, quite a few. Raptors fired a coach that won Coach of the Year, that built a culture and went to the playoffs. Why can't the Bills? Yannick from London.
Yeah, did you just listen to me do a rant and then text it back to me? What's next? Yeah. I did that.
Yeah, just a comparison of
Raptors have fired the reigning coach of the year twice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that took me a second, and I was like, right. And then I'm not going to say anything else because I don't want to say anything.
Yeah.
Blake, the world needs your basketball expertise, to answer this burning question.
I was going to say, you don't want my basketball experience.
Who do basketball fans in Pittsburgh cheer for, John in Norfolk County?
I would assume the 76ers, but maybe there's some interstate stuff between Philly and Pittsburgh that you don't want to root for them, but I would assume Philly.
Hmm.
And then they're obviously big Pitt fans for basketball.
Tough area to be. Kind of on the fence.
Well, I don't know the answer. I'm not from Pittsburgh.
All right. Well, you should know everything about basketball. Andrew from Mississauga. Morning. What is the percentage of Scotty
Barnes?
She's
got you there. Like, yeah. She kind of had you dead to rights. Like, you're supposed to know everything,
and
that includes
that. I mean, she's the geography major, so maybe she's supposed to know everything about...
Point and
maps. I do love maps.
Yeah, you do love maps.
Okay. Andrew from Mississauga. What's the percentage of Scotty Barnes jumping ship from the Raptors the second he gets a chance? Andrew.
What? Is that... I didn't realize that we could get texts from, like, 2003.
What do you mean?
That's quite an interesting one, though, just from the standpoint of, like... No, I don't mean it's interesting as an observation at all. It's obviously, like, very odd. But, like, to be watching Scotty Barnes in his rookie year, like... I get that there are damaged Raptors fans, right?
Sure.
And if you're of a certain age, you're just... But then they won a championship and... Like, they've retained multiple players,
yes.
Right? Like, they've just, like, it hasn't...
Like they've retained everyone they wanted to retain except Kawhi.
But that's where you know the damage is so real,
right.
Where you
but
go,
like, yes,
everyone has stayed except for the one guy who's the weirdest guy in the NBA who, like, his teammates all are just like, I have no idea anything about this guy. I'm not close with this guy. Everyone seems to love Fred VanVleet, and yet whenever Fred talks about Kawhi, he's like, yeah, I'm not really close with Kawhi like that. I don't really talk to him.
So... Yeah.
But like, you're that damaged.
I know. Damon Sotomayor left and Vince Carter left and Chris Bosh, you know, wanted the good cable or whatever. But Kyle stayed multiple times. And yes, there was market stuff, but he stayed until that made sense to part ways. DeMar stayed multiple times and didn't want to go. Mm-hmm. Marc Gasol waived a significant trade kicker to join that team. Serge Ibaka really wanted to stay a second time, and the Raptors just didn't see it meeting their timeline, which is something they've been really criticized for and maybe was the right call. Fred has stayed. Pascal stayed. Like, these guys have... And obviously, these are young guys where the financial situation is always going to lean them to stay, but that's also going to apply to Scotty Barnes, who, if you really want to worry about it, you know when he's going to be a UFA and the Raptors can't offer him a boatload more money than anyone else? First of all, never, but if you want to get like really niche with it, 9 years into a guy's career.
So
you get a 4-year rookie scale deal, and then almost every rookie who performs will sign a every rookie at the level of Scotty Barnes and where you hope he goes as the number 4 pick will then sign a 5-year extension on that rookie scale deal. So, yes, in 2030, maybe there's a concern if the Raptors aren't doing very well.
Yeah, so Vince Carter was traded in 2004.
I can't believe we're still doing this. Guys are going to leave Toronto.
No, but he left in 2004. That was when Vince Carter got traded. Yeah. So it's been 2004.
I mean,
we're almost 20 years removed from this. It's time. I get it.
And
there's damage to sports
Bosch
fans.
But after that, but also like, who wouldn't leave to play with LeBron and Dwayne Wade?
Mm-hmm. Like, I think Vince Carter is the reason why there's still that insecurity.
Sure,
with people.
And like, even if you go with the Bosch route, that was over a decade ago. Yeah.
And there's a bit of it. I think it did. The Kawhi thing resurfaced a little just because he's the only guy to ever leave a championship team, but also that. I really believe people thought he was going to stay when the helicopter showed back up. And then there was the Jalen Rose report where Jalen was like, he's coming back, and everybody really bought in and got their hopes up.
It's my favorite thing of like Raptors Twitter and I'm sure every fan base does this, but it's like scoffing at anyone who reacts to a poorly sourced report or an unreliable report. But then when it's about your team, biting on it, no matter who the source is, it's great. Anyway. That text is from a very long time ago.
Okay. Blake, do you know what the Edmonton Stingers are, or should I not ask that one? Okay. Kevin B from Newmarket. Still loving the show. I love when Kevin B texts in.
Still.
But still.
What? It's like barely hanging on. Kevin B, we're barely
thanks,
holding them.
Blake, I will say ahead of this, if it's about the North American Basketball Champions League, I haven't caught up on the Stingers yet. But yes,
so
I heard.
Blake, what do you think of them?
I saw that they won.
Did you watch? Okay.
So,
never mind.
Basically, basketball is trying to do like their version of CONCACAF Gold Cup or whatever right now. And the Edmonton Stingers were the CEBL champions. So they're representing Canada there and they got a win yesterday, but that's about as far as I've caught up on it right now.
Even Daniele, who's like the most hardcore basketball guy, is like, don't do this. All right.
Well,
please,
I'm just,
God.
I'm answering the question.
Sorry, moving on.
Daniele's like looking with a blank stare at me over this. I'm like, that's not good. Yeah.
Curtis in Edmonton. Good morning. Yeah. I'm going to the Leafs game tonight. Does Ailish have a goal scoring prop bet that she recommends for tonight? Any former Leafs or Oilers? Okay. If Hyman's in, there's no doubt about it. I'll bet my house. I don't have one.
Yeah.
But I think I see a big night from McDavid and Matthews. I think that we talked about it earlier in the 6 o'clock hour that they have this rivalry that kind of has been quiet this year because of no Canadian division like we had in the bubble season. But I do think that they'll get up for this game and they'll want to outshine each other. So I'll be putting like a Matthews probably and McDavid. Maybe not parlayed, but either of them and maybe a little Hyman.
I was going to say, sometimes there are those props of both players score or both players get on the
board. I would not be surprised if that's the case.
Yeah.
Have fun,
I like that bet, actually, though, to bet on those two top players in this game. You know why I really like it is because we were sleeping on it a bit. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not talking about it. We're doing the Hyman thing.
Yeah.
That...
spicy.
Sort of into that one.
All right.
So but here's what I would also say. You're also throwing down the Tyson Barry prop. No?
I feel less confident about Tyson Barry. He doesn't occupy much space in my brain anymore.
But what about my heart. What about just Tyson Barry to get a point?
A point, maybe. Yeah. Like, is he on their power play? I don't even know what he's up to over there. Okay, well, I can
Cody
see that.
CeCe.
Cody CeCe.
We're just going through former Leafs. The Oilers really love the Leafs.
They love the Leafs.
Well, not only that, it's hilarious because the Oilers' biggest thing right now is that they're not getting any depth scoring after they signed a former Leaf. And it's like everyone mocks the Leafs. Like, you can't win this way. You can't do it this way. Not with the forwards that you pay this much money to. You can't do it with the salary cap allocation this way. And then nobody talks about the Oilers doing like a very, very similar thing. And then basically trying to copy the Leafs with everything that they do. Mm. Yeah,
I don't see any player props up yet, but maybe by the time we do our show at 8:30, I mean our betting segment.
Yeah, there's not a player points prop for Barry. McDavid's plus 100 to score. Tyson Barry's plus 400.
Free money.
Plus 400 to score. Nothing on the board for Hyman or CeCe.
What about Matthews?
Plus 100 also.
Mm. Well, they basically guaranteeing there's a goal.
No, well, that says we'll it's 50-50. Yeah. There's a goal.
I mean, it's pretty good odds.
That's pretty damn good.
Okay, so on the Austin Matthews thing, this was an earlier text from the 6 o'clock hour when we were talking about Matthews and his performance, and this is from Rick and Markham. I don't think we've seen the best of Austin Matthews this season. I think winning the Rocket and then being embarrassed in the first round, again, has left a bad taste in his mouth. I think he's reserving a gear, and I just haven't seen the same Austin Matthews. I think he's saving something for the playoffs.
I mean, maybe... but also, like, it's a long season, and I don't know if guys at this level of competition, like, I don't know if shift to shift you're saving a ton, right? Like, he is averaging a minute less a game, and he missed those couple early games. Mm-hmm. But I think that gear toward the playoffs is more about how you're handling your off days, how you're handling your long-term maintenance and stuff. I don't think his shooting percentage is down from 18 to 15% because he's saving a little something. I think that's more of an off-ice consideration.
Yeah. Here's all I'll say to that is I hope that you're right in one sense, which is that Matthews has another gear to give. But I would like to see that. And I don't think that you need to quote-unquote save that for the playoffs, but Matthews is a really good player. He's one of the game's best players. Or I should say most talented players. And this season, though... We spent a lot of time during the offseason like talking about Marner and a lot of time in the offseason talking about Tavares contract and Nylander's value and the whatever, depth, blue line, GM, blah, blah, blah. And Matthews has always kind of been the constant, well, you don't need to worry about that. You don't need to talk about that. And I agree. Like, you don't need to really worry about Austin Matthews. I don't think that he's ever going to underperform to a degree where you go, boy, he really... But last year during the playoffs, with everything that was made up of Mitch Marner... that Matthews was also not scoring. Like, he was on that line. And we sort of talk about it sometimes as though he wasn't. And I would like to see that guy elevate his play when it matters. And that guy, I do think, needs to find a little bit more of a nasty streak, a little bit more consistency at times of staying engaged in big hockey games. Mm-hmm. And yeah, if you want to be compared to McDavid, I think that you're going to have to take, just like McDavid, a step in your career. You can't have it plateau as who you are. So I think it's the two things can be true. Matthews is amazing. Matthews is the Leafs' best player. Sometimes you need even more from your best players.
He's going to show up tonight. Mark my words.
Yeah, because you're gambling on it.
Speaking of gambling, Simon from Newmarket's on a mini heater. I won four 100-point spreads on Sunday. Felt ballsy, made another $100 prop last night and won it. Atta boy. Yay, Simon!
Receipts.
Simon, yeah, send us the screenshots, Simon.
Simon, we want those texts when you get cooled off, too.
Get us in the loop.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if I'd be texting in a show when I'm hot. I feel like that's a...
You're going to mush yourself?
Yeah.
Although JD's accusing me of mushing everything lately.
You're a mush.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you. You've been mushing things. And here's the thing. Again, you're not... You're an intentional musher, which is worse. You come for people.
That's all right. We'll let him off.
We established that I didn't mush Ailish.
Simon's losing streak just ended. Sorry. Someone texted that in. Yeah. Sorry, Simon. We mushed
winning streak just ended.
Mm-hmm. Well, they said losing streak. So, yeah. But I didn't use my brain on that one.
All right.
Neither did they.
Will from Kitchener. Great show. Morning, everyone. Longtime listener, first time texter. If you had one dessert as your last, what would it be and why? You know, we got to get our food talk in every morning. Yum, yum, yum.
God.
One dessert.
Like.
That's a toughie.
I think I would have a brownie. Like an elite one.
Oh.
Well, obviously. I
want a mediocre brownie, actually.
No, I'm just saying, like, I'm not taking a bag of 2 bites, even though those are awesome. But no, I think an elite brownie would have to be my choice.
What about a warm chocolate chip cookie? Just like it melts. You pull it apart and the chocolate chunks are just
not
like...
enough. A cookie, it's not enough.
What if it's a giant cookie pizza?
No, that's it. But those never get made that well.
I know.
You know, so... No, but listen... You guys, can you please take this seriously? Can you please take this seriously? This is the only thing in the show that I care about today, is I think that for me, it would come down to, if I got a box of cookies as the final dessert.
No, it was one item.
I get one item, then I think it's a brownie. If it's not a brownie, it might be a butter tart, pecan butter tart.
This weekend I made coconut cream pie.
Oh, you did?
My God, it was so good.
Huh, so I keep bringing in all this baking and...
I cannot transport coconut cream pie from Sudbury to you.
Again,
why?
I cannot transport the food that is baked in the carrying case of the food.
So somebody just texted in cherry cheesecake now.
Okay. You know what? Ailish isn't going to give us pie or baking.
But what was your dessert choice?
I was going to go with the... warm chocolate chip cookie right out of the oven, but it got taken from me.
No. How did it get taken?
Ailish said it.
Well, I don't think I've chosen that. I was proposing it.
Okay. I thought you chose like 6 things there.
You can also choose brownie.
There's only one left in the world.
The question wasn't if you guys were in a Squid Games for the final dessert and you won, who would you take? It was just, what would you take? So your chocolate chip cookie warm out of the oven.
Yes. That's what I'm eating at my floor seats for WWE Holiday Tour at Coca-Cola Coliseum.
Well, here's a great text. How about a Portuguese custard tart?
I hate those. I'm sorry. Those are disgusting. I'm sorry, Portuguese people. I know you love them. I know. But it's like, come on. That's your dessert? It's not good. It's not good. Ailish, you haven't even weighed in on this. What you said, you're going to have your coconut cream pie?
I'm not. I'll have to think about it. Blake has something important, though. This is much more important than our food.
Okay. The WWE Holiday Tour is headed to the Coca-Cola Coliseum on Wednesday, December 29th, and we want to send you. All you have to do is tune into the Fan Morning Show all week long and listen for the cue to call. We'll be giving away a pair of tickets later this morning and every day this week. So stay tuned, listen through all the dessert talk, and get ready to call. Free WWE tickets. We're giving away Leaf tickets later, too. So keep an ear out for that.